You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everyone. I'm C.B. Leslie, the host of New Books in Historical Fiction, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I'm speaking with Erica Rummel about her latest novel, The Road to Gesualdo. As luck would have it, when I picked up this book, I had just finished reading a historical study about the arranged marriage of Isabella d'Este of Ferrara and the Duke of Mantua. So I recognized right away that Leonora d'Este, a major secondary character in The Road to Gesualdo, must come from the same family as Isabella. And as you can hear from the opening passages, Leonora faces a similar destiny, too. Spring was in the air. The capes of the two ladies strolling in the ducal garden were fluttering in the warm breeze. Last night's rain had turned the lawns emerald green and swelled the stream crossing the park. It was a glorious day, but Livia was in a dark mood. "Something is not right," she said to her mistress. "Every time I mention Prince Carlo's name, people lower their eyes and fall silent. What are they holding back?" "I don't want to know," Leonora d'Este said, and heaved a sigh that made the pearls in her hair quiver. "What's the use of chasing rumors? The contract is signed. I must marry the man my brother has chosen for me." Her skirt, densely embroidered with a floral motif of russet and gold, weighed her down and made her move ponderously. But it also gave her an air of dignity, and Leonora d'Este never forgot what she owed to her illustrious family. The House of Este had ruled Ferrara for the past 300 years. "I must do my duty and marry Prince Carlo," she said. Livia threw up her hands in frustration. "You must do your duty. You must do as your brother says. And what if it turns out that Prince Carlo is a monster?" "He isn't," Leonora said, and walked on stiffly. Beside her, Livia cut an insignificant figure. She was small and delicately put together, with a head of unruly hair and a voice as melodic as a poem. "You have never laid eyes on Prince Carlo," she said to Leonora. "How can you be so sure that he isn't a monster?" Leonora turned to her lady-in-waiting and held out a pendant dangling from a gold chain around her neck. "You may judge for yourself, my dear," she said. Carlo Gesualdo had sent her a locket with his portrait done in enamel. She opened it for Livia to see. The man in the portrait was young and handsome. He had close-cropped hair, a narrow face with strongly marked crescent brows, a long straight nose, and a delicate mouth. "He has sensitive lips, don't you think?" Leonora said. "They look cruel to me. Beautifully cruel." And now, please join me in welcoming Erica Rummel.
Hi, Erica. I look forward to talking with you today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You started out as an academic and a very successful one. You've also worked in publishing. How did you get started writing fiction?
Very slowly and very late in life. Slowly, because I'm an immigrant. I come from Vienna, Austria, and so I had to learn English first. And late, because I had to make a living. And so for many years, I focused on my academic career and published only academic nonfiction books, well, except for a few short stories. My problem with fiction writing was that I needed stretches of quiet, solitary time, and I didn't have that. It was only after I retired that I did have that kind of leisure, and so that's when I became a fiction writer full time.
So tell us a bit about your previous novels.
As a professional historian, I thought my second career would naturally be in historical fiction, but there were a few things that I had to get off my chest first, and so my first novels are strongly autobiographical. I spent some years in Los Angeles, so my first novel is about Hollywood. And then I lived some years in Argentina, so my second novel reflects that experience. And two other novels are about immigrants from Vienna, like me. So you could call that historical novels in the sense that they are set in the 20th century. But then I really got into historical fiction with my last novel, The Inquisitor's Niece, which won an award. And it deals with the Spanish Inquisition in the 16th century. It's a love story between a Jew and a Christian and all the attendant problems. And my new novel, The Road to Gesualdo, is also set in the Renaissance in the 16th century, which is my area of expertise.
Mine too.
Yeah. What a coincidence, eh? Of course you liked the novel then.
Yes, I did enjoy it very much. Although I recognize the name d'Este, as mentioned in my introduction, it wasn't until I was searching for the pronunciation of Gesualdo on the internet that I discovered that Carlo Gesualdo was a historical figure, in fact, an acclaimed musician with a tragic history. So even though I normally start with the fictional characters, do tell us about his past, as it's such a central element of the novel, as it's revealed early in the book.
Well, Carlo Gesualdo's backstory is rather nasty. He caught his wife in bed with her lover, and he murdered them both. Now, this was lawful in the 16th century. It was his right as a nobleman to avenge this insult to his name and to the honor of his family. But the fact that it was legit, of course, doesn't make it morally right. You already mentioned that Carlo Gesualdo was an acclaimed musician, but he also had mental problems. He struggled with mental problems. Well, in modern terms, we would say he struggled with an addiction. He was a drug addict. In terms of the 16th century, or at least in the eyes of Leonora d'Este, his second wife, he was bewitched. And she, Leonora d'Este, in fact managed to have his dealers convicted of witchcraft.
And I'm glad you mentioned Leonora d'Este. She's also a historical character. Who is she, and why do their kinsfolk want them to marry?
Leonora's uncle, Alfonso d'Este, was the Duke of Ferrara, and he needed the political support of the powerful Gesualdo family. So the purpose of marrying Leonora to Carlo was to cement the alliance between those two families. Leonora, wasn't consulted at all. She was just a pawn in a political game.
And she's not too crazy about the idea, as we learn from the very beginning. What worries her, and what can you tell us about her personality more generally?
Well, Leonora, in my novel, Leonora is a gentle and loving soul. And she doesn't actively resist the idea of an arranged marriage. On the contrary, she is quite willing to do her duty and to serve the interests of her family. But she also takes her marriage vows seriously, the bit about loving and obeying your husband. And so her question, or rather her dilemma, is will she be able to love her future husband?
And she does marry him, despite her fears, but her fears are not met at first. How do they get along?
Yes, to her great relief, she finds her husband very agreeable, and the common bond here is their joint love of music. But she soon discovers that Carlo is mentally disturbed. And her reaction to that discovery is compassion. So she's compassionate, she's determined to help and protect him.
The protagonist of your novel, though, is Livia Prevera. I'm assuming that she is your creation, is that right?
Yes, Livia is my creation, and she's my kind of woman. So I wanted a balance to the pliable and tradition-bound Leonora, and Livia provides that balance. She is an independent thinker, strong-minded, courageous, willing to run risks for a cause or for the people she loves, to the point of endangering her own life.
She loves, I'm going to mess up this name, the Pietro, I can say, Pacci?
Yeah.
What is his story?
Livia and Pietro love each other, and so this would make a happy story, except that neither of them has any money. And Pietro's family expects him to marry an heiress and make a career as a diplomat at the court of Ferrara.
And what you can tell us about him as a person?
Pietro at this point is at the crossroads. He doesn't know isn't sure about his priorities. Should he pursue his career? Should he pursue his love? And it doesn't help that he works for Cesare d'Este, who practically forbids him to associate with Livia.
I'm glad you brought up Cesare d'Este, too. He's also a historical character, and he is indeed a character in the slang sense of the term. Cesare has great ambitions, and he's not too fond of Livia. What does he want, and why does he feel that Livia is interfering with it or likely to interfere with it?
Cesare d'Este is Leonora's brother. And he is a bully and a thug. He's also the Duke's nearest male relative and his designated heir. But that all depends on the collaboration of the Gesualdo family. So this planned marriage between Leonora and Carlo is very important to him. And Livia is much too enterprising for Cesare's taste. He's afraid that she will find out about Carlo's unsavory past, and that she will encourage Leonora to resist the arranged marriage. Now, Cesare is a dangerous man, and he has no scruples whatsoever. He's going to kill anyone who stands in his way, as Livia discovers.
So even though Livia and Pietro are in love, they can't marry for the reason that you mentioned, because they don't have any money. And so Livia is sent off to accompany Leonora to her new home in Gesualdo after the wedding, and Pietro is dispatched to Rome. So what is Pietro doing in Rome, but also how do they cope individually with the fact that they're separated and believe at the moment that they're separated that they may never be together again?
Pietro is on his first diplomatic mission in Rome, and both he and Livia try to rationalize their situation. Well, they can't marry, and so they agree to go their separate ways. But both discover very soon that you can't reason with your emotions. In Livia's case, it means that she goes through a period of depression, thinking that she's lost Pietro. And when Leonora encourages her to consider another suit, that she declines and says she's no longer interested in marriage. She'll change her mind about that, you'll see.
And Pietro? How does he cope with it?
Well, Pietro is set up to marry a wealthy young woman in Rome, but he can't forget Livia, and he comes to the conclusion also that he made a mistake to give her up for the sake of his career, and, as it were, to sell himself to the highest bidder. And furthermore, he discovers that he really isn't cut out for the career of a diplomat. He can't do the necessary lying and maneuvering and intriguing. In fact, he's up against the deadly intrigue himself that might land him in the court of the Inquisition.
Yes, tell us about Signor Tommaso Amosto, who is the father of the marriageable daughter, Isolde, who has been selected for Pietro, whether he likes it or not. What is his story? And her story, for that matter.
Well, Amosto is a diplomat at the papal court. And as Pietro eventually finds out, he wants to pawn off his daughter on him. The daughter is very good looking and will get a very large dowry, but it turns out she had an affair with someone, and so her name is tarnished. And so it isn't really as wonderful a setup as he was led to believe. But the real reason why he is no longer interested in what's going on in Rome is that he loves Livia and he comes to the realization that he got his priorities wrong.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Yes, I given the current climate, we might want to specify to our listeners, although if they're reading historical fiction, they probably know this, it was important in those days for brides to be virgins. So the mere fact that she could be linked to another man was made her an ineligible bride.
Oh, right, yeah. Or you had to pay. You had to give a big dowry.
So tell us a bit about this intrigue, as much as you want to share, that Pietro encounters in Rome, because that's really fascinating, and I suspect a lot of it is, if not in every detail, nonetheless generally accurate for the period.
The one aspect, dangerous aspect, is that is this arranged marriage, but the other one is that he's supposed to find out how powerful the Gesualdos actually are at court. And this brings him in contact with a man, a cardinal, whose taste is for young men. And so the only way he could possibly be successful with this cardinal is if he became his lover. Well, obviously that's not in the cards for Pietro. So he becomes more and more disappointed and with this whole diplomatic career. It's not his bag.
Meanwhile, Livia accompanies Don Carlo, Leonora, and their party to Gesualdo, as I mentioned. And it's a rather dangerous journey. I mean, I don't know how far you want to go into the story, so you don't have to give us that many particulars. But talk about travel in general in the 16th century in Italy, to give us a sense of what kinds of dangers they might face.
Well, it was traveling in the 16th century was definitely risky business, first because of highway robbers, and then because inns were breeding grounds for disease. So the conditions are really inconceivable for us today. You were obliged to share a room, and sometimes even a bed, with people unknown to you. And the bedding wasn't changed regularly, so you slept with the lice and the fleas and the sweat and worse, whatever other people had left behind. And in the tap room of the inn, usually there was a layer of straw on the floor to soak up whatever filth was brought in or whatever, scraps fell off and spills fell off the table. And the innkeeper's dogs would snuffle around there and scavenge for food. So it was like sitting in a garbage dump. Now, that was the ordinary traveler. Now, Prince Carlo and Leonora traveled in style, and they were surrounded by servants and armed guards who would keep them safe and as comfortable as possible. So the conditions were more hygienic, but Leonora was pregnant by that time, and that brought its own dangers, because miscarriages were very, very common, and giving birth could be a deadly affair. About 10% of women died in childbirth, and the same number of babies died within a month of birth. So my novel will give you a little history lesson about all the superstitions and the precautions and the whole ritual associated with pregnancy and childbirth.
And what did Gesualdo when they reach it? What is it like? And you said you've been there, so what is it like? Yeah. What is left of it? What's it like now as well?
Well, I visited the castle about 5 years ago when it was being restored to its original condition. It's all there, believe it or not. It had been cut up into something like 20 apartments, so people were living there. And I think it was probably a relatively comfortable place to live in. It looks forbidding from the outside because of, well, it's like it's a fortress, you know, thick, windowless walls. But it has a lovely interior court and terraces at the back overlooking a broad valley. And the rooms themselves are very high. They have high timbered ceilings. So I imagine it would be pleasantly cool in the summer. And in the winter, well, in the winter you probably had to huddle in front of the fireplace, but it's southern Italy, and so the winters are mild there.
And how do Leonora and Livia relate to it? Do they like being there?
Both of them, or Livia in particular, is homesick, except that she doesn't quite know if she's homesick or if she's sick or is she nostalgic for Pietro. Whereas I think, or in my novel at any rate, Leonora is reconciled to her fate, and she's now married to Carlo, and they're getting along well, and soon she's going to have a baby, and so I guess Gesualdo is her home now.
So once established in the palace, Livia realizes that Prince Carlo is not the only member of the Gesualdo family. Tell us about Emanuele and whatever you'd like to share about his history.
Now, Emanuele is Don Carlo's son by his first marriage. He's a 9-year-old boy, and in my novel, the prince shuns the poor child because he believes that his dead wife is haunting the castle and is, as it were, looking out through his son's eyes and trying to harm him and the pregnant Leonora. And, of course, in a metaphorical sense, the dead woman does haunt him. I don't want to say too much more about the story, but let's just say eventually he does reconcile with his son.
Emanuele has a tutor, and he and Livia become, could you say, friends? Or?
He would like to be, yes, the tutor would like to be more, but Livia is not interested in another suitor.
So one other character I think we should at least mention is Aurelia Darico. What do we know early on about her and her connection with Prince Carlo?
Aurelia is a dealer in herbs. That is, she sells love potions and other sort of questionable cures. Now, the illness or this mental instability Leonora sees in her husband is, in fact, the result of the poisonous concoctions Aurelia has given him. Aurelia is also reputed to be a witch, a very beautiful witch who seduces men and ruins them. But I can't say much more about that without spoiling the plot.
Sure, that's fine. As listeners must realize by now, this novel includes both historical and fictional characters. So what does that mean for you as an author in terms of the research you need to do and then how you craft a story that is fundamentally fictional?
Well, I have done extensive research for my historical novels, but as a novelist, I don't feel absolutely obliged to stick to the historical truth in all its details. I do want to give my readers a sense of what it was like to live in the 16th century. But hey, it's fiction, right? It's not a history book. And in real life, Leonora and Carlo were not a happy couple. But as a fiction writer, I indulge my fantasy and I give their life a nice story arc and a happy ending. So that's my gift to the reader, is a happy ending.
Do you have available to you the sources that talk about individual historical characters in this period? I know I just read a book, which was really interesting, about the arranged marriage of Isabella d'Este. And there, the historian had managed to get, you know, letters and diaries and things like that. Do you have those kinds of sources available to you for Leonora and Carlo?
For Leonora and Carlo, I do have some reports by diplomats at the court of Ferrara. I also have studied Inquisition records extensively. So that, for example, there's one scene in the novel where Aurelia Darico is brought before the Inquisition, and the dialogue there is historically accurate. That's the sort of thing that it would be asked. Another historically accurate aspect or section in the novel is the murder of Carlo's first wife. That is described in detail because the whole affair had to be brought before the court to decide whether this was legit or not legit. So we have witness reports for that murder. So yes, there are sections in that novel that follow very closely primary sources and others that I just made up.
And what is your process as you sit down to write the story? You started with the story of Carlo Gesualdo and his wife, right? And how did you go from there to creating, to turning it into a novel?
Well, as I said, I wasn't. When you read somebody's history, the story, as life stories go, don't follow a particular pattern. Life doesn't always make sense, but when you write a novel, it has to make sense, right? So, and it has to, you have to develop a certain storyline, and that is not present in real life. You have to come up with that. And the other thing is that I did not find Carlo, the real Carlo and Leonora, all that satisfying as characters. So that's why I felt I had to bring in Livia, who is more my type of woman, so she would work as a foil. I think I'm perhaps being a little inaccurate there in the sense that she was perhaps more enterprising than women would be in the 16th century, although there are plenty of examples of individuals, outstanding individuals, who showed that kind of initiative.
Oh, I agree. I think, you know, people don't change that much over time. I think it's a misunderstanding to believe that medieval and Renaissance women were inevitably doormats. You know, there are lots of very strong, I mean, Isabella d'Este was a very strong-willed woman.
For example, yes. I mean, there are certainly examples, but Leonora d'Este was not. For example, she complained that Carlo maltreated her, and her brothers, in fact, suggested to her to get out of the marriage and to have it annulled. But she was traditional enough to refuse that. She didn't want to do that. She'd rather stick it out. So in that respect, the Leonora in my novel is true to history. She sticks it out.
That's really interesting. So she objected in the beginning and they weren't happy, and yet she still refused the annulment, historically, not in your novel.
Yes, that's the historical truth. And although she chose to stay with her brothers for long periods of time and not live at Gesualdo, nevertheless, she did not want to annul the marriage or leave Carlo. So and it's also historically accurate that she took the his drug dealers to court, two women, and that she had them condemned as witches. And they were condemned to prison, but now this is the funny part, prison in the dungeon of the castle. So I don't know how effective that was. So what, he had in-house drug dealers or what? You know, they were in the basement. So there are these elements that are historical, and then there are these other elements that I put in there, or I rounded it off differently.
So what would you like readers to take away from The Road to Gesualdo?
Well, definitely the fact that life was fraught with difficulties in the 16th century, especially for women. And of course, we all like adventures, but it's more entertaining to read about them than to go through them yourself. On the other hand, there are certain timeless elements, like Pietro struggling with his priorities. Should you follow your passions, or should you be rational and build your career? So some readers may identify with that struggle, and then maybe the novel gives them a chance to reflect on that.
This novel has just come out earlier this month. Are you already working on something new?
Yes, I am. And I'm presently working on something entirely different, a novel about Evita Peron and the lost treasure of her jewels. So these jewels have never been found, but they're rumored to have to be stored in a vault in the Swiss Alps. So my novel will tell you exactly where they are and what happened, at least in my imagination. But you'll get a real sense of Argentina, what Argentina was like in the 1940s and 50s. And if you've seen the musical Evita, well, this could be your follow-up.
Well, that sounds great. I'll look for that. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today, Erica.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to our podcast. Once again, I am C.P. Leslie, the host of New Books in Historical Fiction, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. And today I've been talking with Erica Rummel about The Road to Gesualdo. Find out more about her at www.ericarummel.com. Like us on Facebook, search for NB Historical Fiction, and follow us on Twitter at New Books Histfic. If you do, you'll see each time we post a new interview. You can find out more about me and my books at www.cplesley.com, where I upload expanded posts about the interviews and in general discuss history, historical fiction, and the rapidly changing publishing industry. Goodbye until my next conversation about historical fiction on the New Books Network.